Case number 13-5007, Jeffrey Schmidt, also known as Jeff Schmidt, appellant versus United States of America. Mr. Eisenberg for the appellant, Mr. Peterson for the appellate.
Your Honors, if it so please the Court, I'd like to piggyback, if I may, on the last cases, appellant's arguments, and just kind of cut to the chase here. The court below erred as a matter of law by dismissing the case. Simply put, the issue of res judicata is not an issue before the lower court. If we look at the two issues that were originally before the court, first being the joint motion for remand back to the agency because the agency allowed its executive director to make a substantive decision contrary to BCNR action. Then we had the JMR. The board then acted and created its own decision. Now, as an aside, if the board simply adopted the ED's decision, as may be inferred by Ellie's brief, well, then the board clearly acted arbitrarily and capriciously. Putting that aside, we also argue that the board did act arbitrarily and capriciously when we presented new evidence that was not within the control of the appellant during his time of his first application. That being said, a new cause, case and controversy has now been created. And it's that issue, not whether the ED, the executive director, made a substantive decision, but whether or not the board properly ruled that we had not presented new additional evidence.
I thought the board said the new evidence was not material.
That's what we're arguing. The new evidence is not material, but also that it was new and different evidence. I'm sorry.
But the board did recognize that it was new.
But they say it wasn't different.
Okay, or not material.
And not material, but the problem with that argument is that the military never provided my client any psychological exam for his PTSD that he had during his time in service. So it's not...
But did you petition for that? I mean, the VA conducted the mental exam.
Not until after the first BCNR.
Right.
So my client had no knowledge of this evidence that he needed to get. He had no, I mean, with all due respect, you're asking a veteran to say, hey, not only do I recognize that I have PTSD, but I need to get treatment for it. It's not as easy as when you lose an arm or a leg and say, hey, I need some sort of help here.
Okay, then I may be misunderstanding. I thought the VA diagnosed him with PTSD.
Yes.
And changed his disability rating.
Yes.
And the Board of Corrections recognized that that had happened, but said it was not, so that it was new, but that it was not material because apparently the VA and the Board of Corrections are wildly divergent when it comes to disability ratings.
Absolutely. Well, if I may, two things. Forgive me, I just forgot my first, but the second thing is, the application of the VASRD, the VA schedule rating diagnostic code, it uses the same VASRD. It's how they get there that is the difference between the two. The military determines if any condition in particular in itself is unfitting for service. Then that goes to the VASRD. the VA will look at any condition that is related to his military service and apply the Vassar D, so unfitting or not. So they're using the same code for the same facts. The question is whether or not the condition is unfitting at the time of when it goes forward.
All right, so your complaint is the board's failure to see it as material, this new evidence.
Yes.
As material. Do you also argue that that was a request for the board to order its own mental evaluation?
Yes, which the board has broad abilities.
Okay. But did you ask for that expressly?
I don't recall from our brief. We asked that, that the VA diagnosis be treated as new material. And from that, the board can springboard, and if it wants its own diagnosis, its own treatment, because if I recall correctly, his PTSD was effective the day after he was discharged. So how is it then that suddenly he walked off the base and now has PTSD?
Well, is it your argument that once the Board of Corrections disregarded the VA's diagnosis / disability rating, that it was then incumbent on the board to conduct its own mental evaluation?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's that issue, you know, the board's decision not to determine that the evidence is new and material, and also the board's failure to provide its own psychological treatment, which it didn't have. The record is completely void of the military ever doing that before his discharge. It's that issue, or those issues, that were on appeal still remaining before the district court. It's a brand new APA issue. And as a matter of judicial economy, my client should not have to refile the case. It should still be part and parcel, because my understanding was the district court still had control of the matter pursuant to the JMR.
But the district court, the only issue transferred to the district court was the procedural APA challenge. That was the only issue that was transferred to the district court, and then that issue got remanded.
Correct.
So how is it that the rest of, you know, all of the rest of the issues then all of a sudden are properly before the district court after following the remand?
Respectfully, Your Honor, the remaining issues that you refer to were never an issue before the CFC. It was created after the remand. The board had never acted.
Okay, but you never filed an amended complaint properly that placed those issues before the district court, correct?
Given the solicitude of Congress has been longstanding for our veterans, there's no reason why this issue should not have come up with or without a corrected pleading.
I mean, so we're supposed to ignore Rule 15 and the rules of civil procedure for how an amended complaint gets filed and how the case proceeds?
I'm saying that great deference needs to be given to the veterans, period. And I believe our motion for to amend the complaint was denied. So if we're being denied.
But you didn't make a motion. You filed an amended complaint without filing a motion. The amended complaint was stricken, and then you never filed a formal motion to amend the complaint. You filed a motion to be heard,
which was denied.
Did you file a motion to amend?
We filed the amended complaint
without a motion.
I think we may have erred in not filing the motion to amend the complaint. That being said, though, the direction we were being given by the district court judge at the time was that the issue is dead, which brings us here. Obviously, if we can simply go back and file a motion to amend the complaint, you know, then we'll accept that court order.
But that's the only thing that's before us now, because the APA claim is moot because the board did reach a decision on its own.
APA issue has moved.
Okay. But you moved to amend your complaint, let's say, I think, without following Rule 15. That was denied, and instead of either complying with Rule 15 or renewing it under the local rules, you filed a motion to be heard, which I don't recognize as anything other than you wanted your amended complaint to be treated, and she had denied it. So the way I see it, the only thing before us is the denial of the amended complaint, which is under an abuse of discretion standard of review.
And again, given the solicitude of Congress has been longstanding for the veterans, it shouldn't have been denied.
So are you saying that was an abuse of discretion?
Yes.
Okay.
Why was it an abuse of discretion?
And again, well, if I may, again, I'm going back to the same phrase I've used earlier, the solicitude of Congress has been longstanding for the veterans. The veteran, if you look at the BCNR language, has great flexibility and liberty when it comes to filing claims and new claims and requests for reconsiderations before the BCNR. So as a matter of judicial economy, to have us go back and start the whole process over again, it's not only wasteful to a veteran's limited means, but also to the resources of this court and the court below.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Peterson?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Benton Peterson for the government. The only issue before this court is the issue with regard to the mootness of the claim, the procedural claim. The issues concerning the procedural claim were the only issues before the district court were the issues concerning the procedural claim that was transferred from the Court of Federal Claims to the district court. That claim was. Procedural claim was actually cured by the Board of Corrections. And in that process, mooting out the only issue that remained before the district court to resolve. After the curing of that claim, the plaintiff did file without permission an amended complaint, which was stricken for reasons that the district court indicated in its order, striking that motion, amended complaint, and there was never an effort to refile the motion or file a motion for that or for reconsideration of that decision. Further, that issue was never brought before this court as an abuse of discretion in the moving papers.
Well, now, the district court denied the motion to amend not because of the procedural or any procedural defect, and I don't think you all have argued the procedural defect either, the government, I mean, but she denied it because she thought that would put her in the position of being an appellate court from the court of claims.
That's
what she said.
That's essentially the rationale behind the actual denial
right.
of the amended complaint. However, the fact remains that there was never, a motion for reconsideration with regard to that determination, and further, there was never an issue brought before this court as to that action being an abuse of discretion.
Have you argued that? I mean, before right now, I thought you hadn't argued that before.
In terms of our papers. With regard to that issue, we had never argued that issue with regard to the rationale behind the denial of the amended complaint. What we did say was that because that issue isn't before the court, wasn't put before the court within the issues presented, and because the amended complaint was actually denied and the only claim that the district court had before it was resolved, that would equate to mootness of the issue, because the claims that the appellant seeks to put before the court now weren't before the district court at any point. All of the claims outside of the APA claim were dismissed by the Court of Federal Claims pursuant to that court's order. And the only issue that was transferred and that survived the Court of Federal Claims was the actual procedural claim, which was then cured. So that's how we discussed it in our brief. We never discussed it in terms of Rule 15 or with regard to the rationale behind the district court's actions, because it didn't seem to get to be ripe for that discussion if it A, was never moved for reconsideration, and B, never put before this court as an abuse of discretion by the opening brief. And we made that point in our brief that issue was never put before the court. And so we left it at that with regard to our opening jurisdictional argument with regard to mootness of the only claim that remains for adjudication before the district court and before this court.
Let me just understand the end game here. If we were to affirm as you request, then where does that leave Mr. Schmidt as far as these other claims that he would like to have heard?
So those claims has the other claims, whatever massive claims that the appellant believes are his other claims, were adjudicated before the Court of Federal Claims. And to the extent that they were dismissed, if there were appellate issues with those claims, my understanding is that that time has run with regard to his ability to appeal that decision, if he chose to. The other options that I'm aware of, and I'm not aware of all of the options for the appellant, but the other option that I am aware of is that there is an ability with regard to the substantive issues that he brings up to file yet another motion for reconsideration with regard to the board, indicating that there are new and material and different circumstances that the board needs to consider with regard to his corrections of his records. Those are at least two. That's the one option that I am aware of for the appellant with regard to moving his case forward, if he would like to move his case forward in that direction. However, even if you were to do that, as we argue in our brief, seeking appeal of that, if the board were to deny his motion for reconsideration, seeking appeal of that, the federal courts would also be precluded because of the statute of limitations argument, which we make in our brief, which basically, the thrust of that argument is basically that there cannot be an indefinite tolling of the statute of limitations in this case with regard to simply, first of all, alleging that there are new facts and new evidence and material facts for the board to consider, and then simply filing a motion for reconsideration. Tolling the statute of limitations would equal an indefinite process where the service members can elongate the statute of limitations process indefinitely without an ending to the process at any point.
Okay, can I ask you, do you have the appendix? Can you turn to page 41? That's the prayer for relief and in the amended complaint. And if the motion to amend had been allowed, and if this complaint was before the district court, looking at paragraph 27 and using what the district court used as the reason to deny the amended complaint, mainly I would be acting as an appellate court over the Court of Claims, he asked for remanding it for a full and good faith consideration on the merit, and then all of these sub-requests, evaluation of the connection between his service and the current disabling condition, whether he should have been placed on the temporary disability retirement list, the inconsistencies between the VA's findings and the military findings, and then all other previously presented claims that were not considered by the board.
That's right.
Now, is it your position that the Court of Claims addressed all of these?
No, it is not our position. Our position is that he did ask for different relief with regard to the Court of Federal Claims complaint and the district court complaint.
All right, so she wouldn't have been acting as an appellate court over the Court of Claims if she had granted the motion to amend.
Hypothetically, that's true under the precedent of Kendall. If there was a question with regard to the thrust of the complaint, whether it was seeking monetary or equitable relief, it's a close call. In hypothetically, that would present her with an opportunity to rule on the equitable portions of the complaint without running afoul of the Tucker Act. So that's the hypothetical. But in this case, the amended complaint was never accepted, and it was rejected, and there was never an effort to reassert that. And further, in the timeline, this amended complaint came after the remand. And the fact that the actual relief indicates that there was a substantive decision yet to be made with regard to this claim further underscores our argument that the remand to the board was a procedural remand and should not be seen as reopening the substance of the actual denial that happened in 1992, and 16 years after his discharge, which runs well afoul of the 6-year statute of limitations that would normally apply in these kinds of cases.
What is your response to Mr. Eisenberg saying that it was an abuse of discretion to deny the motion to amend because of the solicitude that is due a veteran?
I would say, first of all, there's no authority for that other than the claim that there is such solicitude, and it was never brought up in the brief. But secondly, I would say that there was, I believe that by a consent remand to the board to give the relief that the service members sought at the Court of Federal Claims, which was a review of whether or not the executive member should participate or sign off on the actual decision, was an example of that solicitude in terms of a consent remand to resolve that issue, to make sure that there weren't any issues with regard to the actual statutory or regulatory obligations of the agency. And in that vein, because it didn't work out in the end for the service member, does not mean that the agency or the court did not have an example of solicitude for the service member. So if there are no further questions, Your Honor.
All right. I guess not. Well,
thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Well, the government asks that the court affirm the decision below.
All right. Does Mr. Eisenberg have any time? All right. Why don't you take a minute?
Thank you. I appreciate that, Your Honor. Your Honor, if I may, in response to appellee counsel's comments, solicitude has been recognized by our Superior Court since Henderson v. Shinseki and early case progeny. This court has the ability to review the matter below de novo pursuant to the USC. The statute of limitations has not run on this matter because this matter was newly created by the recent PCNR decision from 2011. That being said, we are not appealing the decision that for his discharge back in 1992. We are appealing the arbitrary and capricious nature of the BCNR action below. For us to file an amended motion or a motion to amend the complaint after the judge gave a fairly substantive denial of the complaint itself would have just been a waste of judicial economy and judicial time. And most importantly, the substantive issue never reached the Court of Federal Claims and never had an opportunity for a full hearing of that issue below. Now, again, either which we should have done is had our ability to amend the complaint in the past, or we have to now file a new complaint that the board acted arbitrary and capricious by denying what we consider to be new and material evidence. Therefore, we ask that this court overturn the decision below and order a new hearing on the matter. Thank you.
Thank you.